When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm Marjorie Bennett.
I'm Elizabeth Reese.
This is Best of the Nest, the podcast that's all about creating strong, comfortable, beautiful nests that prepare us to fly. I have been out walking. I try and walk every day for about an hour.
Wow.
And this is a very Kansas statement that I'm about to make. We are in the midst of the prairie burn. If you don't know what the prairie burn is, look it up. It's pretty cool. But it happens in the spring. But what it means is there's smoke. So this brings me to talking about Pourma Climate Smart Skincare. So I'm in the Midwest, so I have a skincare program that is completely tailored to where I live. It's climate smart skincare, affordable luxury skincare from France, proven for anti-aging results. Pourma Climate Smart Skincare. You can use the code NEST for an extra 20% off with a 100% money back guarantee. You can go to pourmoiskincare.com. That's P-O-U-R-M-O-I skincare.com. But the reason I bring up the smoke is because today and yesterday, I used my smoke alarm drops.
Yes, you did. I'm so proud of you.
I know. I knew you would be. That's why I saved it to the end. I saved it to the very end because I knew you would be proud of me because I'm using my Pourma exactly how it is supposed to be used, which it is. I use the temperate day cream.
Yeah.
And then I just put a little bit of the smoke alarm drops in there to protect my skin from the smoke. It was really noticeable yesterday, less so today, but I use smoke drops both days. Love
if
that.
You dig into, I know you'll have fun with this, and then we'll get into our episode, but dig into the smoke alarm drops on the Pourma website, Marjorie, because you get real science nerdy about stuff. And
love that.
The research about the damage that those fine smoke particles do to our skin, I call them smarticles.
When
they sit on your skin, that it is seriously intense and it will very much motivate you whenever there is any sort of fire situation, even insofar as when we're having a neighborhood bonfire and somebody gets their solo stove out, which we just did, I just toss an extra little layer on right before I go outside.
It's great. It's great. It made me so happy to do what I'm supposed to be doing and follow the protocol. I love a good system.
I love the system too. And we love Pourma Climate Smart Skincare. This is always a fun episode that we do every month where we talk about what we're watching, reading, and listening to. And we do this on Twin Cities Live too. And it's always so fun for me because it's just a way to get to know people on a different level. Like when you hear about what they're consuming and then what their take on it is, you always can delve a little bit more into who they are as a person. We had Michelle Young. She's the former, she was a bachelorette on ABC's Bachelorette.
Oh, yeah.
She was like three bachelorettes ago and she's from Minnesota. And we had her on and right before the segment, I was like, I'm telling you, this is when we really get to know you. And she's like, ha ha ha, whatever. And then after she's like, no, you're right. I shared so much. It was really
fun. Great. Oh, that's great. Because it's true. I mean, when you find out how people are spending their time, it's so revelatory. So do you want to start? What are you reading?
You want to start with reading?
No, okay. No, I don't know what's wrong with me.
What kind of operation are we running here?
I do have a glass of wine. That might be the problem.
I think that's a good way to go. Okay, so okay. I will tell you something that we're watching because, you know, everything I'm watching lately has to do with either I'm watching it with my kids or it's like daytime television because my children stay up too late for me to be able to watch a show by myself. This is the time of life that I'm in. But we're watching this Percy Jackson and the Olympians on Disney Plus.
Yep.
Have you read these books because you're all into your literature with your children and such?
You know what is so funny is we just had to read a YA novel last week for class, and nobody really, it's called The Dark is Rising, and nobody really loved it in class. And what came up of what people love is Percy Jackson. So it was quite the chatter in class, but I've never seen it or read it.
Okay, so I have never read it, but now I'm very excited to read it. And it showed up on Disney Plus. Yes. And so it's got a little bit of like a bit of a Harry Potter vibe, but with the twist of the Greek gods. And so Percy Jackson is a half-blood, which it's got a little bit of like Harry Potter where you find out that Harry Potter, that his parents were both wizards. But Percy Jackson is a half-blood, which means that one of his parents is a god or a goddess and one of his parents is not. And so he's raised by his human mother and does not know who his god of a father is. And I'm not going to give too much away because it's really fun to watch. I'll say the episodes are about 40 minutes long. We just watched two more before I put the kids to bed tonight as we're recording this. And mine are not too afraid of things. Like even my three-year-old, we watch Star Wars. They seem to very much understand it's
fiction.
Different. And there's also like no blood in these kinds of things. So I really draw the line at blood. Like Star Wars, there's no blood. So some of the Marvel things get a little tricky because it can get a little violent. So I always have to like pre-watch those, or I ask my Marvel nerd friends which ones they can watch. But this is really great. It's well done. It's interesting. Like, I feel like I'm with the story, even though I haven't read the books. And so it makes me even more excited to read the books with the kids, or maybe like download them on Audible and then listen to them with the kids. But it's very fun to, I actually think you would like it, Marjorie.
I may go back and watch it, especially after last week's class, because everybody was talking about that book in class. They were talking about, and exactly the way you talked about it, it was Harry Potter and Percy Jackson. And so it was very interesting. There was something I was going to ask you about that. Is it live action or is it animated?
It's both. I mean, because there's all this, like, I don't know how they do the CGI, but it's live people. It's live, like, humans acting.
Okay.
And then the rest of it, but there's, like, so many special effects in it that almost make it seem kind of animated. But Percy Jackson is a demigod. He's on a quest to prevent a war among the Olympian gods. And it's just sort of fun because it also makes you, you know, remember the stories of all of these gods and goddesses, like Medusa shows up and there's Athena and, you know, there's all these different references. And then it makes me kind of go, oh yeah, I want to remember more about like these stories and these legends. Cause it's very interesting.
Well, that's great. Cause it's a great jumping off point to share those stories with your kids.
Yeah.
I mean, that could take bedtime storytelling to a whole new level. So that's pretty cool.
It's really fun. Very fun. Percy Jackson, I'm recommending it. I'm loving it. We're on episode 7 and there's just one season out.
Well, coincidentally, I'm on season 7 of Will and Grace.
Oh,
I am just barreling through Will and Grace. And I remember saying when I talked about this last month that I was watching Will and Grace again, a sitcom from the 90s. Or the 2000s, somewhere in there.
Probably both, maybe, huh?
That they were handling sort of these topics well. And I will say, as the show progresses, it's satire. And it's pretty full on. And it gets more aggressive as the seasons go on.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing some pretty politically incorrect things with intention. They're not politically incorrect. It's satirical. But I'm not sure it would play today.
Mm.
So it's interesting. I think it's really well done, but you have to read it as satire or you would be highly offended. So it's interesting. It's just interesting to go back, but I'm enjoying it. I'm on season. I skipped it. I'm now in the place where I'm skipping episodes. I'm just skipping episodes because it's too much. Like I want to finish. Once I start a series, I want to finish it. And season 6, you can tell it's sort of in the dip of a series arc. So they're having every celebrity walk on that they could possibly have, which is sort of ruining the actual authentic comedy and the chemistry of the original cast, because they have to make room for these special celebrity guests.
Well, remember how we've talked about that when I listened to Smartless, which I just listened to the episode with Kristen Stewart, which was really interesting. But when I listened to Smartless, and Sean Hayes is on the podcast Smartless, and I've told you this. It's like half the guests that come on Smartless were like, remember when I was a guest star on Will and Grace? And they really went through that.
Right. I mean, Jack, he played Jack. Sean Hayes plays Jack, who still is just, he's amazing in Will and Grace. I mean, from a comedic standpoint, he's just amazing. But they, I mean, Jennifer Lopez was just on an episode I watched. Andy McDowell was on. I mean, it just, so many people. So it doesn't surprise me. I mean, good for SmartList that they can get all these. And now they're kind of like older celebrity guests, but still pretty big names.
Speaking of that, though, that's funny that you bring that up because Megan Mullally is in Percy Jackson. She's in of episodes. Yeah. And I don't know if she's going to end up like coming back at some point because I don't know anything about the story. But she is in it. And it was fun to see her.
She's amazing in Will and Grace. And there's a lot of jokes about her boobs in Will and Grace. But I got to say, the woman might have the most perfect set of breasts I've ever seen. And you see them a lot.
They were properly dressed too. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of like the button up and lift it up. There you go. Yeah.
There's a lot going on, but a lot of jokes about the boobs, but they are pretty darn good boobs. So anyway, that's what I'm watching.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I have two things that I'm reading because I'm not really listening to anything. I'm just listening to boring health podcasts, which I need to stop, and I need to start like managing my life a little bit better because I've been listening to some of them and I'm like, oh man, these are going too far. So, you know, that's something that I'll deal with in my off time. But okay, two things that are food related that I'm reading. Number one is this Edible Minnesota magazine. So I don't know if you guys ever hear or you see these edible magazines. They're kind of all over the country and
they're beautiful.
They're beautifully done. So there was an Edible Twin Cities for years and I used to guest write for it. So I would write a column or, you know, a little piece every, not for every issue, but like for some of them. And then I contributed, they did a cookbook and I contributed a few recipes to the cookbook.
Oh, fun.
And it was really fun. And it was like very exciting to see my name in a cookbook. I mean, I just thought that was wildly exciting.
It's like winning an Oscar for you.
Right. That's it. So Edible Minnesota, they've now had this resurgence and this magazine is back. And it's this young couple, Amy and Nick, who were in, I forget if they told me they were in Montana. I think they were in Montana. I just had coffee with them. And they were in Montana and they saw that version of the Edible magazine. And they were like, why don't we have one of these? Like, I never see this. And so they didn't even realize that there had been one. And then Nick just kept saying like, I think we should do this. And they both have full-time jobs.
I love people like this.
Yes.
I love people like this.
They both have full-time jobs and they just decided, well, maybe we could be the ones who do it. And so they are bringing this magazine back to life. They decided to re-up it as Edible Minnesota instead of Twin Cities so that they could cover more of the state, which I thought was so brilliant.
Yeah.
And they have really fantastic writers. I'm fortunate to know a lot of them, like my friend Michelle, who wrote Small Scale Homesteading. She's Forks in the Dirt on Instagram. JD Fratsky is a really great chef and an amazing writer. Just all these people.
Oh, fantastic.
Writing really cool things. And so the magazine is free and you can find it at all sorts of locations. And you can also subscribe to it for like, I think it's like $20 and then you get it quarterly. But it's very wonderful and it's great stories. And they're just highlighting great people who are creating great food. And I love that their focus on making it more about Minnesota was also to be able to widen that focus into more people who are growing the food versus just chefs in restaurants, which, you know, they're all very important. But frankly, the chefs couldn't cook anything if the farmers weren't growing it.
The best stories in food are starting with the chef and then working your way backward. That's when it gets interesting. That's great. Oh, that's great.
It's really
inspiring. I love, this reminds me of our sheep herder that we had. I don't know what episode it was.
Oh yeah, Teresa. Like,
yeah, we're going to buy a farm.
Yeah.
And then we're going to buy some sheep because that seems like the right thing to do.
I know. I was just messaging with her and she was telling me about the lambs and I've got to bring the kids to see the lambs. She's in Northfield, Get Bent's Farms. That's a great episode of Best to the Nest.
Can you bring me to see the lambs?
Come and visit. Let's go on a farm
tour.
I actually kind of want to do, I was talking with Michelle about this, that we want to try to do some sort of like farm tour this summer where we would host it and then we would go to different farms. We've got a workshop.
Okay, well, if TCL isn't going to do that, let's do a Best to the Nest farm tour.
Oh, yeah. We can totally do that.
Wouldn't that be so fun?
Yeah, it'd be great.
So fun.
TCL will be like, we'll send a camera, but we're not going to organize it. They got enough going on. Like, I'll figure it out. And then one more thing that I am reading the book Nourishing Traditions by Sally Fallon. So I like some of these like old school kind of obscure cookbooks, like the Moosewood cookbook from like the 70s is one of my favorite cookbooks. It's a vegetarian cookbook. I'm not a vegetarian, but I once was. And I just love the recipes. But Nourishing Traditions is Sally Fallon. It is really great in terms of just all of these recipes that are things that we have forgotten about in terms of our modern way of processing food. So there's great recipes for fermenting things. There's great recipes for doing all sorts of broths, like super healing broths. And then a lot of historical information about how particular traditional cultures use these types of foods to, you know, nourish themselves. And so it's a really great read. It's like old school. If you go into like any health food store, you're going to see it.
It's going to be there.
I was just at this Mastel's health store in St. Paul the other day, and they have a copy of it. But it's got a lot of information, but also a lot of really great recipes. And so I took the kids to the park on Easter while Jay was working on the ham, and I brought the book, and I did like what I've always wanted to do as a mother, which is sit and read a cookbook while my children play at the park for 2 hours. And that is exactly what happened. It was like shocking.
That's magic.
Coming back to me. At one point, we had to go to the porta potty. But, you know, other than that, it was like very much smooth sailing. And I got to just sit and enjoy the book. But if you've ever sort of wondered, like, you know, why do people have such a hard time with like grains now? And we didn't used to. And a lot of it comes down to the, and I know you learned this a lot when you were doing your food TV, but a lot of it comes down to the way that we process grains, that we take the shortcuts today, that we don't do the soaking and the sprouting and the fermenting and the nixtamalization, which is what's happening when you're taking care of corn, which was like the traditional way to get rid of that outer part of the grain, which is the seed that the seed doesn't want you to eat because it wants it to go into the ground. And so like just being a little bit more thoughtful about like the things that you purchase or the way that you prepare some of these grains can be totally life-changing for people.
That's great. That's great. And we'll have, as we always do with Watch, Read, Listen, we'll have, this will all be in the show notes because I actually am very interested in that cookbook.
She has nourishing fats, nourishing broths. I mean, you can really get into a collection, which is fun. But before we get to your listen, let's say once again, a thank you to our presenting sponsor of Best to the Nest, which is Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. Oh, and what you're reading too. I kind of barreled through all of it, but we'll let you know that this is the skincare line that I've used for 3 years. I love it so much. I do not use anything else on my skin. I just said this in a Facebook Live with Uli, the founder of Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. I use Pour Moi and I get cosmetic acupuncture, and that is it. There's nothing else that's happening on this face of mine. And this is a really great time to try, especially as the seasons are changing. So, I mean, I think any time is a great time to start Pour Moi, but I think you'll really see a difference when those seasons change. It is a 4-step system that you buy for products, but 3 steps. So you get 2-day creams, a serum, and a hydrating balancer, and then you pick the different day cream based on what the weather that day is. So like right now in Minnesota, we're using temperate. I'm just kind of saying goodbye to the polar because I think that we're done with it. And then we'll shift into some marine and some tropical, and it becomes very, very fun. And you can feel your skin be completely in line with the seasons.
Yes. And always, we are so grateful that they have such faith in our show and such faith in our skin.
Yeah.
Because we are loving it. Okay. So read.
Yes.
I just finished a book called The Giver, and this was actually assigned for my illustration class, 1993 YA dystopian novel. I tell you this because I think the grade level on this would probably be like 7th and 8th grade.
Okay.
And I don't 100% know. So it is dystopian. It's sad. It's complicated. It's got themes of euthanasia in it. It's got, I mean, yeah, it's a lot. It's been banned for years. So many school districts won't even teach this book. It's by Lois Lowry. I say this to you because I'm planting the seed in your little parental brain on being hyper aware of what dystopian literature you want to enter into your children's brains and what dystopian literature, how you're going to gatekeep that.
Interesting.
And this is something that I really feel kind of strongly about, but I haven't fully formulated my thoughts. I don't think any book should be banned. I don't agree with that. And if a teacher is going to have this on a reading list, I wouldn't be one of those parents that would go in and say, no, I don't want my child reading dystopian literature at age 12. But as a parent, in terms of extra reading, I think I would steer my kids away from a lot of this.
Like if it was guided and there was a conversation and there was some context to reading it, that's one thing. Like there's some guardrails there versus just letting your child kind of read this off. You know, see, because I have this thing, like I never had any books censored. My parents censored everything else.
Yeah.
No Madonna, no MTV, no like random shows. Married with Children was like, I mean, it was like you were inviting Satan himself into your house. So there are none of these things that we were consuming when I was a kid, but not a single limit on a book, which is why I was reading books that were way too advanced for me when I was a child. But at the same time, like, I kind of like that about my parents. So I got to figure this out.
But what I will say is that if your child brings home a title that is dystopian, I would highly encourage you as a parent to read it simultaneously and then have good conversations about it. Because I'm not about banning, but I just, as I read it, I was like, oh my God, I am so glad I did not read this when I was 12.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I didn't read this. And so I just feel like, well done, good book, but it's a lot for a 12-year-old. So I'm just saying. So that's The Giver by Lois Lowry.
This is why I just say so much of this is about expectation. I mean, we've talked about this when we've talked about banned books before. It's like, if you wouldn't frame it as young adult, if it was like framed as something a little bit older, you wouldn't have this whole like hoorah hoopla issue. Like there's plenty of weirdo books out there. It's just, if it's like, hey, we're going to gear this towards young adult, that's when people get their undies all bunched up about it. And then it turns into this banning thing, which makes it a whole bigger deal than it even needs to be.
It doesn't need to be. There are some really interesting themes in the book that I think a 12 or 13 year old should be discussing. All I'm saying is it is dystopian. I'm just planting the seed because I love you and I love your children of just, if the dystopian literature is coming into your house, you need to read it too.
Oh,
that's the point.
Can we just read The Babysitter's Club and call it a day? Okay, keep going.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And then what I'm listening to reading for myself is Vanderbilt by Anderson Cooper. So that's been quite enjoyable. So, what are you listening to?
Well, I mean, I'm really not listening to anything because my children are so still obsessed with Michael Jackson. And here's what I want to tell you. I've mentioned this before. You know, Michael Jackson, a complicated character. Bernie is so deep into the obsession about Michael Jackson. I don't know like what has happened and how she has been. She will literally say like, I miss Michael Jackson. I wish I could see Michael Jackson. And how many children does Michael Jackson have? Who is their mother? Was Michael Jackson married? How much money does Michael Jackson have? And I'm going to tell you something, Marjorie Punnett. You start answering these questions all the time and you find yourself very troubled to the point where she loves him so much. So she's like, Jay and I just finally had to say the other night, she's like, I just don't understand why you just don't love him as much as we do, as I do. And I was like, because Bernie, we lived through him being alive and it's much more complicated. Like Michael Jackson, no one would want his life. It was very, very difficult. It was like...
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying? It's a very strange thing. And then the fact is that they just keep wanting to listen to it. And I finally have had to say in the car, like, and I listened at the beginning of this, I was like, these are some bangers. I am ready for this. Like, I am going down memory lane with these Michael Jackson songs and I'm loving it. But when you have listened to them 45,000 times on the way and fro school, you can't take it anymore. And I'm finding myself turning into my parents where I have to turn the music down in order to hear myself think. And I have to say, like, I can't listen to Smooth Criminal another time. And these are songs that like I'm attached to as an adult. You know how they say that there's that neuro attachment that happens to music that you listen to when you were a teenager?
Yes.
That you're attached to music that you heard as a teenager more than any other music that you will ever be attached to in the rest of your life.
We just studied this in the nostalgia class. The primo years are 8 to 14.
It's
and
fascinating.
There is science to back this up.
Yes. Proceed. I am not just spouting off one of my like random things.
100% right.
But like, it can also be ruined by listening to it too much.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily have as much of that attachment to Michael Jackson also, because as I was realizing, like, Thriller came out in like 1980. Well, I was born in 1981. And so, you know, those songs were old when I was listening to music.
Right.
Like,
right.
But if you bust out Janet Jackson,
ooh, Velvet
I'm here
Rope.
For it.
Oh. Get them addicted to Janet.
So that's what I'm trying to do.
We don't have a problem with Janet.
No,
we like
Janet.
Oh, Velvet Rope. The kids and I used to dance to that all the time.
So
love
great.
That album.
So I'm trying to like shift a little bit, but it's just been this nonstop barrage of questions about Michael Jackson's life that are very tricky to explain. And then has gotten me down all of these rabbit holes of like these parents who were letting their children sleep over with him. Why are they not prosecuted for this? Like, this is baffling.
Okay. Yeah.
That's
this
a whole nother thing. See, it's like, this isn't good for me, you guys.
Yeah. And this is not a good conversation to be having with Bernie about why they didn't prosecute the parents. This is not the conversation you want to have with her.
Well, when she was asked, when she asked her teacher in February, why Michael Jackson wasn't on the wall of distinguished Black Americans, because during Black History Month, they had this huge wall of distinguished Black Americans. And then each child got to pick someone to do essentially like research on and a report on, which was wonderful. And she picked Marianne something, the woman who was, she was like the first Black opera singer who was famous in the United States. And I'm sorry, I probably butchered her name, but I can't remember. But she's, so she was like telling me all this stuff, but she asked her teacher, why is Michael Jackson not on the wall? And the teacher said, because he had a complicated story, which I thought was a good answer.
So everybody just keeps telling, Bernie, it's so complicated. It's just so complicated. And it is so complicated. And I will tell you, I was walking with friends today and Michael Jackson came up and we had a complicated discussion about it. Yes, absolutely. And one of my friends said he can listen to Michael Jackson pre-complication. And can't listen to anything post-complication. And that's what I'll say, because I don't want us to get sued. So, I mean, that's where we land with Michael Jackson. So I'm going to tell you, then definitely don't let her start YouTubing Michael Jackson at age 6.
Why?
When he's on all these old variety shows, because he's so adorable. And she'll fall more in love with him.
She loves to watch videos. Like, she's like, can I watch the black or white video? And then she's like, what?
Oh, no.
She's like, why did he write Earth Song? Like, what is it about? And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't even know Earth Song was a song until
What is happening?
Okay, she's a very curious little human. And she...
Who introduced her to Michael Jackson?
I don't know.
That's the person... That's the person we need to go after.
She was kind of like this about Taylor Swift.
Okay.
She also then, I mean, she asks a lot of questions about Taylor Swift, but here's the newsflash, guys. Taylor Swift, not as complicated.
No, not at all. Not complicated. Okay. So who do we try and introduce her to surreptitiously so we don't know we're introducing her to somebody to get her off the Michael Jackson thing?
I mean, she likes Ed Sheeran too. She likes...
Could we go Bee Gees? She wants retro.
Yeah,
she's
if she
retro.
Wants retro, I think
she
I
wants
gotta
a little
make
disco
a natural
beat.
Transition to Janet. Like, Janet's gonna help me. Janet's gonna
okay,
come
Janet,
in. She's gonna save the day.
Bee Gees might
get,
be
like,
interesting.
Yeah, Cyndi Lauper we could do. Like, some Debbie Gibson. And I'm liking all of this old stuff.
Debbie Gibson.
But anyway,
oh,
that's
know.
Where I'm
I
at. Listen, I didn't
Debbie,
plan to share
Debbie
all that, but here
Debbie
I am.
Debbie Gibson's not cool.
Really?
I don't think that's a good transition.
Deborah? She did change it to Deborah later. So there you go. Guys, you can weigh in. When your kids get obsessed with something and you love them dearly and you like want to encourage conversation, but like sometimes I just can't talk about Michael Jackson anymore. I need like
a
month.
And problem is she's the oldest, so everybody follows her lead. Don't tell her that buried deep in my garage is the Michael Jackson doll with the one glove, which I never opened because we thought it'll be worth money someday.
Is it?
So it is in my garage.
I know,
well,
but is
I
it worth
think
something?
So. No, because his life got complicated. I don't know. I never looked it up, but it's in there. If it's not worth
he
anything.
He certainly was worth a lot more dead than alive. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, it is.
That's a scary thought.
But side note,
I'll look it up.
If you want something else to ruin your perspective of someone who is beloved, watch the movie Priscilla. And I watched it on the plane to Hawaii. I don't know if I ever put this in my watch re-listen, but you know, while we're here, I watched the movie Priscilla. I was haunted by this movie for like 3 weeks after watching it because she was 14 and no one seemed to look at this as like a predator situation. And still to this day, I do not feel that people are adequately assessing that as a predator situation simply because they say, and she continues to say, that they did not have sex until she was 18. So, and that is like made very clear in the movie that she wanted to, but he was like, no, not, this isn't the time. He basically like used her as his own little personal caged bird who was so innocent and who would just sit quietly and listen to him and like basically just reaffirm everything that he thought. If she challenged him, he got mad. He would drug her to wake up and to go to sleep. Her parents signed over her life to him. I mean, they signed over that he could be the one that could enroll her in school. And she went and was like in a cage in Graceland. It is so beyond troubling. And I mean, as a person who like, I have no emotional attachment to Elvis at all because he was way before my time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is so and let's troubling.
Be clear. Let's be clear. Way before my time too.
I'm aware. Way
okay,
before.
Okay. Thank you. Way before
but like,
my
no,
time
I
too.
I don't remember my parents but, listening to Elvis. Like, you know what I mean? I don't even have any emotional attachment like that.
But here's the thing. And we have to put this in context to the era. Ugh. There were so many women that were getting married in those days at 16 and 17, not 14, but 15, 16, 17. I actually think my mother-in-law, I think she got married at 17.
No, she did not.
I think she did. She had gotten a scholarship to Northwestern when she was 17. She was from Kentucky and she met Ian's father.
Right.
She had won a scholarship to Northwestern and a trip to Europe.
Wow.
She was a singer. And she
That's
met
amazing.
It was amazing. She met my husband's father on the ship when she threw up in his lap. That was their origin story. And she got seasick, threw up in his lap at church services. They ended up getting married, but I think she was 17 and he talked her out of going to Northwestern.
No.
Yes. So she didn't end up going to Northwestern until she was like in her 30s. And then she went back and she finished her degree at Northwestern and then
Did
got
she
her
get
master's
the scholarship
at Northwestern.
Back?
No more scholarship. No more scholarship. But married, I think she was 17. I mean,
I still
didn't
feel
era.
Like 17 is different than 14. Also, the fact that he was like 28 and she was 14.
Please, I'm not defending Elvis. Please don't.
I know you're not.
No.
But I do appreciate the context of the era. I think that is important to consider.
Yes.
That
it's a different time. And the reason it's important to remember the context is because as women, we get to understand how far we've come and what we fought for. I mean,
couldn't
honestly,
even have your own checking account till 1976. Unbelievable.
My mom fought to get a credit card because she was a professional woman. And the day she died, she still had her American Express credit card because American Express was the only company that would give her a credit card, I think, in 1974. She was making more than my father, and she could not get a credit card. And American Express gave her a credit card in her name, and she would not give that up. She had that until she died. I know. It's amazing. So that's what we have to remember is like, oh my gosh, yes, horrible that Priscilla was 14. Context, awful, but look where we are. Aren't we glad?
You got to watch that movie. I need you to watch that movie and report
okay,
back
I will.
And see if I'm and over, see if I'm like overly horrified by this. But I was deeply troubled and still clearly it continues because I brought it up here unexpectedly. This is because this is a safe space. The nest.
It is a safe space. But that's fascinating. It's a fascinating thing to think. I'll watch the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I wasn't born in the 50s. I'll just say that.
Me too.
I would not have wanted to be a woman in the 50s. Okay. Where are we?
Oh, we're wrapping. That's it.
I'm listening. I'm listening to Sting. I'm going a little retro. I'm very excited about that. Brand New Day, had forgotten, came out in 1999. It won the Grammy that year for Best Pop Album. Brand New Day, which I used to make you listen to all the time, I think, on the show.
I remember this all the time.
Mm-hmm. Desert Rose, A Thousand Years, beautiful songs. They're great to just chill to, have a glass of wine. So if you haven't thought about Sting in a long time, maybe it's time to think of Sting again.
Yeah, that's good. That's like we've been listening to Lionel Richie because we're into American Idol. We're deeply into American Idol at our house this season, and it's very fun.
I do love him.
Who is, by the way, 74 years old, and Bernie could not believe that he's 74. Her mind was out. How old is Lionel Richie? I said, I think he's 70. She said, absolutely not. There is no way he is 70. I said, I think he is. Ask Alexa. Alexa said, Lionel Richie is 74 years old. And she was like, what?
Okay. I think Bernie is like a 30-year-old woman stuck in a 9-year-old's body.
She's fascinating. She has so many thoughts. I love everything about it. I know.
Okay. If you're enjoying this podcast, which I'm really not sure everything we talked about, but like we went places that I wasn't expecting to go.
We went in all the wrong order. It was a whole mess.
It was a whole thing, but it is late. We're recording this at night. They're always different when we do them at night. If you're enjoying this podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast and give us a review at Apple Podcasts.
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Best to the Nest. We also have a cute little website. It's besttothenest.com. I go there sometimes. It makes me happy. We are the podcast that brings you home.